for 20 minutes. I want to speak on something that might not sound very religious to you, but it could get to be extremely religious. The power of words, spoken or unspoken. And there are silent words that you say every day, and you say a million things without ever opening your mouth. I hear people say, you know what, I don't make a difference with anybody. I don't make a difference anywhere. I'm kind of my own person. I kind of do my own thing. I just kind of, you don't affect anybody. What you've got to know, baby, is that you affect everybody that you ever are in the presence of, one way or the other. You send out vibes from your body that tell things to people if you never address them with your words. There were some educators that walked into a fifth grade classroom on the first day of school and called the teacher out in the hall. And they said to her, do you see the girl right over there with the blonde, the little ponytails, all that? Okay, this guy over here in the plaid shirt. They picked out five students out of that classroom. And they said to this teacher, all of these five students are above average in intelligence. They have a very high IQ. And we just wanted you to be apprised of that before you start your school year. And she thanked them. I don't know what she did. I don't know what she said. I don't know how she reacted. I don't know how she acted. All I know is that when that year had come to a close, all five of those students had excelled in all of their academic achievements. They were born leaders, she said. Very smart kids. So the guys came back at the end and they called her out again and for a little conference, and they said, what about the five students that we showed you at the beginning of the school year? Did you find any difference in them and the other students? She said, oh, you were exactly right. She said, would you believe that those five students excelled above all the students in the classroom? And they looked at each other with a little knowing look, and she said, what's going on? And they said, the truth of the matter is, ma'am, that we did not know those students. We picked them out at random. We only wanted to find out a little test that we're making, that if you thought that about them, would something from you go to them and change? And it did. Did you know that an 11th grade science teacher proved something with rats? He told his classroom, he said, we're going to do a little project today. We got three mazes here. This maze over here is, it's kind of partitioned off here. And there was a glass here. He said, this is dumb rats. These are average intelligent rats. These are very smart rats. Well, I mean, you can only tell that to an 11th grader, you know. They couldn't tell you that. All rats are smart. They can make anybody jump on a chair. Everybody knows that. So these kids are standing there, and they're watching these rats, because at the end of the maze, you know what a maze is, don't you? It's like something hard to get through, like all kind of, okay, well, you got it. There's cheese at the end, and you know, rats, man, they'll go to hell to get cheese. You know, they like it. So these kids are standing there, and they're watching them. And sure enough, this dumb bunch over here, man, they're just kind of going. And these, they got to the cheese. But these over here, these smart guys, man, they're just brrrr. And so when the whole thing was over, they said, man, said, how'd you know how to separate the rats? How did you tell which ones were dumb and smart and average? And he said, I really didn't. I just was trying to find out that if even a stupid, dumb rat could pick up from you, I'm pulling for you, buddy. I'm pulling. And they made it through. Does that say anything to you? So you don't affect anybody. So what you think of me doesn't affect my behavior. Wrong. Because if you think I'm good, I'm going to try to be good. I'll try to be better. If you think I'm kind of sorry, I may not even care. I might not try at all. You just never know. Long years ago, they called them an insane asylum. They've renamed them now, some like a rehab thing. But anyway, they had a cage. And it was for hopeless people. That meant these inmates here will never get out. Totally insane, without anything up here. There's no hope for them. And they had a little girl in there named Annie. And she would just butt her head on the wall. They had a padded cell there because she'd go around butting her head on the wall and everything. She wouldn't communicate with anybody. They just shoved her food under the door. It was just a hopeless thing. And one of the nurses was going to retire in about 4 months. And she said, before I leave, I want to try something. So she baked some brownies and she went to Annie's cage. Well, Annie ran and started butting her head on the back of the wall and making funny sounds. So she just sat them down there by the cage door. And so she came back by, and of course they were gone. The next day she made some more cookies and she tried to give them to Annie, but she ran. Well, this went on until finally one day they could kind of sit together. And the nurse would sit outside and Annie was inside the cage and they ate cookies together. And this progressed until by the time this nurse retired, Annie was released from the cage, and she was just put in a room like anybody else. And eventually, Annie walked from that facility, a totally sane, intelligent woman. And she made a pact with herself. She said, listen, somebody took a chance on me, and somebody poured themselves into me, so I am going to someday maybe give back to society what that one nurse did for me. One day the Queen of England was giving honors to Helen Keller, who was born blind and deaf. And she said, how is it, Helen, that you have come to be a writer, a speaker, you know, all of this, and from what I can learn about you. At one time, Helen was kind of like a wild animal. I saw a documentary on her one time, and I know they were just probably playing it, but I mean, honestly, it was absolutely awful. I couldn't believe it. And they said, what would you attribute your success to with these two handicaps? And she said, well, I had wonderful parents who gave me the best of everything. I couldn't have asked for a better home or more love. But if I had to give the credit to one person, I think it would have to go to my teacher, Ann Sullivan, who took the time to put into me all that is here and that has come out in speeches and in writing. And I was so kind of shocked, I guess, when I found out that Ann Sullivan had once lived in a cage and they had called her just little crazy Annie. You know, sometimes you might underestimate things that... Okay, for instance, this, I'm so glad all of you got married before you came here, because I don't have any notes that are like pre-marital notes. I have post ones. If you weren't married, I would say marry your best friend. If it's post, I would say try to get to be friends with who you are stuck with. You know what I mean? But you know, sometimes, just even in our relationship with our spouses, why do some of you think that you can be rude to the person that you share life with, but you can be nice to me? Why? Why do you do that? That's stupid. It is stupid. I mean, if I'm going to be nice to anybody, I won't be nice to the man that pays my bills, that makes me a house, that gets me food to eat and puts clothes on my back, you see? Of course, that's not the only reason. I just absolutely adore the man. But wouldn't it be ignorant if every time we got in public, I just said ignorant things about him and tried to put him down and make him look goofy and stupid? Wouldn't that be ignorant on my part? Did you know that? I know you don't know anybody that does that, but I've met people that do that, and I think they're stupid. I've had, you know, little kids, you know, tell me, say, "Oh, I wish I had a marriage like you." I said, "Oh, honey, you got to work real hard to get a marriage like I've got. I don't know if you have the energy or not. You may never live long enough to get one that's great, you know?" And they said, "Well, he just treats you like a queen." I said, "Well, how else do you expect a king to treat a woman that he's married to? I am his queen, only because he's my king." But you see, what these kids don't understand, and there might be, I doubt there'd be anybody here that don't already know this, but I mean, you can tell this to those kids when you get back home. These women that want to be treated like a queen don't understand the rules of royalty, because a peasant has never crowned any woman as king. It takes a king to make a woman a queen. And when these people reduce their spouses, whichever it might be, the man or the woman, to just a mere peasant, you're going to receive the treatment that peasants give to people. They don't know stuff about royalty. If I'm going to be nice to anybody, I'll be nicer to him than I am to any one of you. I don't care how important you are. If I'm going to compliment anybody, it will be him first, before anybody else. I can't imagine living in a house with people that put you down all the time. I can't imagine that. That everything they say to you is an insult, or a barb, or a jibe, or some kind of a, you understand what I'm saying? I couldn't stand that. I don't know what I do. You say, "Well, that's the way we live." Well, more power to you. I hope one of you don't get a butcher knife one day and the other don't have a weapon, because I'm telling you, that's dangerous stuff. Do you ever hear somebody come up to you and say, "Have you heard about whatever?" Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. "Well, you know what? I don't believe that. You know, I heard a really negative report about them, and I just don't think I believe it." Watch this. What did you just say? "I believe it." That's what you just said. When you say, "I don't know. It could be. I mean, I don't want to say." You don't have to say. Your silence said it. Your eyebrows said it. The twist of your mouth said it. Your body language said it. You don't have to say it. Every move you make is saying something. Jean Thompson, before I say this, I want to say, I love these Thomases. You know what I pick up? I just hear him just talking to people, you know, every now and then. I pick up compassion there in the both of them that is so important in a leader. If somebody is like a leader over people and he has no feelings for those people, ooh, that's empty, that's cold. But I pick up an empathy and a compassion in these people, and also in the Giroux's. And I appreciate that, and I know you do too. Jean Thompson stood in front of her class on about maybe the second week of school, and she said, "I want to tell this class that I don't show any partiality. I like all of you the same. I love all of you equally. And I will not show partiality. Not to any of you. I'll treat you all just alike." Jean Thompson lied. already she had found herself gloating over putting a big F across the page of Teddy Stoddard, who sulked in his desk with his grimy fingernails and his greasy hair and his torn clothes and his dirty shirt. He didn't care about his studies. And already she could tell that he was withdrawing more and more, almost from life. She didn't have much patience with him. She didn't have much time for him, not many words to say to him. About a month later, she said, "You know, I haven't really looked over all the reports of these kids from the other classes, and that's something I've got to get around to." And when she came to Teddy's, first grade, very bright student, excels in all of his studies. Second grade, born leader, very bright child, laughs a lot. Third grade, laughs a lot, gets on well with his peers, excels academically. Fourth grade, has the ability to probably do more than what he's doing, seems to be a bit withdrawn, but I understand that his mother has terminal cancer. Maybe this could be the reason. And the fifth grade teacher put the thing down on her desk and sobbed for one solid hour. But it was almost Christmas time, and it was time for the parties to be put together. And she kind of put Teddy on the back burner. And when the Christmas party came, all the little packages, the gift bags, and everything was bright and shiny and tinselly. And the bows were there, and the presents were pretty, and there was a brown paper bag tied with a string. She saved it for last. And when she opened it, it was from Teddy. And it was a bracelet, a rhinestone bracelet, with a few rhinestones missing, and a bottle of perfume, with only half the perfume left in the bottle. And the students began to snicker. But she put that to rest by putting the bracelet on her arm and dabbing the perfume behind her ears. And the bell rang and everybody left except Jean Thompson and Teddy. And Teddy walked up to her desk very shyly and he said, "Miss Thompson, you smell a lot like my mother used to. Thank you for wearing it." He left the room, and Jean sobbed again for an hour. I don't know what she did between that Christmas party in May when school was out, but she watched as the fingernails were clean, and then the hair was shiny, and even the clothes were cleaner. She watched as the papers were neater and the grades began to climb. And by the end of that year, Teddy Stoddard was a brilliant student. She didn't hear from him for a while, and then she got a graduation invitation, and he wrote a little note in there, "You have always been and always will be my favorite teacher." And 4 years later, she got another one. It was college, and it was from Teddy Stoddard, and there was the note, "You always have been and you always will be my favorite teacher." And then she gets another one, and it is from Dr. Theodore Stoddard. And again, there's the note, "Have always been, always will be my favorite teacher." And 2 years later, she got a call, and it was from Teddy. And he said, "Miss Thompson, I'm getting married." And he said, "My father is also dead now. And there's really nobody to sit much in the family section. Would you come and sit where my mother would sit if she were living? And she said, yes, I will, Teddy. And so when the wedding music started and all the flowers and the candles and everything was all in place, sitting over in the mother's seat was Jean Thompson, wearing a bracelet with some rhinestones missing and smelling a lot like Mrs. Stoddard used to smell. If you could only know what you do to other people. If you could only accept the responsibility that you can make a little nobody child feel like the most important person in the world. If you could only know what just one hug would do for a preacher that feels like a failure. If you could only know what just a smile would mean to someone who is so introverted and feels that nobody wants to have anything to do with me. If you could only know, I know you do things differently if you actually knew what a difference you make in everybody's life that you touch. You're great. I love you.